In yesterday's Sedra, we read about the fact that Yisrael had seven daughters, and they came back early one day, and he says, what happened today that you came back so early? So they said, Ish Misri Hitzilonim Yad Haroim, Vekam Dola Dolon Alonu. So he says, why didn't you invite him to eat by us? Kiren Lo V'yocha Lochem. So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, Shema Yisa Achas Mehem. The way to the man's heart is through his stomach. That's the expression. So the Chachamim were very concerned about intermarriage. Intermarriage is a very serious avera. For many generations, the practice used to be that if a Jewish man, would marry a non-Jewish woman, that would be considered equivalent to shmad, and the family would sit shiva. The minig never was, I don't think, that if a Jewish woman would marry a non-Jewish man, that the family would sit shiva, because if the woman is Jewish, even if she lives with a non-Jewish man, the children are going to be Jewish. That's not the end of the line. But if a Jewish man marries a non-Jewish woman, if they have children, so that's the end of the line. The children are not Jewish. So that was considered the equivalent of shmad. We pass in the Shulchan Aruch that one way is a harag bal yavod, the other way is not. If a Jewish man is called upon to sleep with a non-Jewish woman, that's your harag bal yavod. And the reverse, if a Jewish woman is expected to sleep with a non-Jewish man, that's not your harag bal yavod. One is much more chomer than the other. So the Chachamim are very concerned. One is like shma, the other one is an avera, like eating chaz. So the Chachamim prohibited, they make zeris the rabbanon to prevent intermarriage. So they instituted the prohibition of pasakum, you're not allowed to eat bread that's baked by a non-Jew, you're not allowed to eat bishalakum, food that's cooked by a non-Jew, you're not allowed to drink stam yenem, wine that was processed by a non-Jew. The prohibition would have been enough in all of these three mishum chasnus, because we're afraid it's going to lead to intermarriage. The prohibition would have been enough that it should be osa b'achila. Pasakum is osa b'achila, and bishalakum is osa b'achila. Stam yenem should have been osa b'achila, only osa b'shtir, should have been muta b'hanoa. Tosfos explains in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that to be concerned that maybe the non-Jew was menasach the wine l'Avodah Zarah and I'm drinking yayin nesach and it's also banoa, that's very far-fetched. If he was menasach the wine for Avodah Zarah, why is he going to give it to a human being to drink? He's going to give it to the Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos says that would have been on milsa de lo shchicha lo goza berabon. They have no right to make gzeira because they're concerned about a far-fetched thing. It's rarely going to happen. But once they do make gzeira, because there is a serious concern, intermarriage is a reasonable, serious concern, once they make gzeira, then they can make a loy plug. They can even add on to prohibit situations which otherwise are milsa de lo shchicha. So because they made an isa around the stam yein, and because of it, I say, it may lead to intermarriage, so then they added on that even if a non-Jew pours the wine, if I'm going to like the wine, I want to have a life supply of the wine. I'm not going to marry the waiter's daughter. I'm going to marry Mr. Herzog's daughter, Mr. Kedem's daughter, the owner of the wine factory. I'm not going to marry, why should I marry the waiter's daughter? So they made the gzeri now, got to drink stam yenem if it's processed by a non-Jew. But once they made the gzeri, so they said, we're going to throw in also a chashash of chashash nisuch. So they prohibited the wine asa b'hanua, not just asa b'achila because of the farfetch chashash. They also prohibited if the non-Jew pours the wine, that's called koichoi. If he touches the wine or he pours the wine, that's also asa. If he just carries a bottle of wine, carries a barrel of wine, even if the wine is open, if he doesn't stick his fingers in it, his fingers are not touching the wine, then they never prohibited that. So that's the prohibition of pasakum and bishulakum and stam yenem. Tosfos points out that historically the two gzeiros were made at different times. The gzeira pasakum preceded many generations before, to the extent that the Gemara thought at one stage that it was an isa deraisa. Then they say, no, it's a gzeira derabbanan. And the bishulakum was instituted later. So the prohibition of pasakum poses a problem. The pasuk says in Chumash, lo halalechem levado yichya ha'adam, not on bread alone does man live. But the Rishonim paraphrase the pasuk al halechem yichya ha'adam. Bread used to be, years ago, bread was the staple of the meal. The Europeans, or those who learned in Eretz Yisrael years ago, they remember in Chadar Ochel and all the yeshivas, a student would take 8 slices of bread, and they hardly give you a little piece of fish, a little piece of chicken. Today in America, nobody eats bread. We force ourselves on Shabbos and Yom Tov to eat bread, because they're not yotzei in the Suda Shabbos unless you have bread. But years ago, it was very common people ate a lot of bread. So because al alechim yichyeh adam, lo al alechim ado yichyeh adam, but al alechim yichyeh adam, so that was considered a big shas hadchak. And the Jews were always in a business to make money. So bakers apparently never were rich. So Jews weren't interested in going into bakery business. They did a bigger business to make a lot of money. So the question is, if the local baker is a non-Jew, so I can't buy the bread from the non-Jew. I'm going to fall in love with his daughter. The whole community eats his bread. So Mr. non-Jewish boy from the neighborhood is going to marry his daughter. Why should I marry his daughter? So that's why by the Ashkenazim, we are makel that if it's pas palter, if he's a palter, he cooks, he bakes bread for everybody in the community. If we know the bread is kosher, if there's no issue of kosher, you know all the ingredients are kosher, just a question that may lead to intermarriage. So if it's paspalta, so the Ashkenazim are mekel. The Sfardim are machmir, that you should avoid eating pas, even paspalta, and Ashkenazim are mekel. The Shach lived in Vilna, the Shach was an Ashkenazi, so he says even though the Rama always presents the practices of the Ashkenazim, so we're Ashkenazim, we're mekel, but he says he recommends over here more correct is to be machmir, that you shouldn't eat even paspalta, unless the pasuk says mamish not available. Now, Aseres made tshuva, the meaning is that we're machmer, that we don't eat paspalter, and Aseres made tshuva. But all year long, the common practice is to be mekel, and the Shach recommends even Ashkenazim should be machmer not to eat. But let's say my next door neighbor baked the bread. He's not selling the bread to the whole public. I watched the way he baked the bread. I know all the ingredients are kosher, and he baked it in a baking tin and an oven. Everything is kosher. I was watching him the whole time. He baked it in my oven. So since he's my next door neighbor, so that's the real Yisra Pasakum, that you're not allowed to eat, even though everything is kosher. It's not also because of kashrus, it's also because of intermarriage. It may lead to intermarriage. Bishalakum is also, even though you know 100% everything is kosher, but Bishalakum is also because it may lead to intermarriage. The Gemara says that there are two conditions that we're only concerned about. It may be leading to intermarriage if, number one, the food is not edible, it's not roi lechel kamo shuvachai. Let's say apples. In America, everybody eats, maybe in Europe, they didn't eat raw apples. But we eat, in America, we eat raw carrots, we eat raw apples. So even if the non-Jew made, he cooked the carrots, or he cooked the apples, now it's a baked apple, but it could have eaten it without his cooking. So I'm not so makatoiva. I don't owe such a debt of gratitude to the Nochri that he cooked it. He didn't make it edible. It was royal achila without it. So they were never geyser if the food is nechol kamo shuchai. And similarly, they were never geyser if the food is such a low-level food. Ein oel al shulchan malachim. They would never serve it to the king. So that's the question, what does that mean? So it's usually assumed, ein oel al shulchan malachim, would it ever be served in a royal banquet, or let's say if you have a wedding. So you don't give hot dogs in a wedding. Maybe the table for the little children, maybe you give hot dogs. But for the adults, you don't give hot dogs, you don't give a cheap meichel. So whatever is a cheap meichel is never oil al shulchan malachim. So then they never prohibited bisholakum. Rabbi Schwab used to be here in the neighborhood, so he said that he had a brother who lived in Bnei Brak. So he said the first time, I think the first two times he visited his brother in Bnei Brak, he never heard of the Chazon Ish yet. He said he used to visit Vilna in Europe. Chazon Ish lived in Vilna. The Chazon Ish was an Easter. No one knew. Rabbi Chaim Oise used to talk all the time of the Chazon Ish. He said he never heard of the Chazon Ish in Europe. And the first two times he visited his brother in Bnei Brak, he never heard him. By the third time he visited his brother in Bnei Brak, Chazon Ish was already world famous. So he went to visit the Chazon Ish. He says he carried on a friendly conversation. And then he asked, is it okay if I ask some shaylas? So he said the Chazon Ish became dead serious. Scary. And then instead of carrying on a normal conversation, he was giving monosyllabic answers. He would ask a shayla, he would say, osa, muta, osa, muta. No conversations. So one of the shaylas that he asked him was about eating sardines, canned sardines. It's bishalakum. So the Chazon Ish said, osa. So Rabbi Schwab said he started to ask him, but you know, Rabbi Chaim Oizer permitted it. So then he realized in the middle when he's asking the question, what am I asking? Chaim Moshe permitted, he has a right to disagree with Chaim Moshe. So he said, but you know, other Rabbanim say it's permissible because they don't serve sardines in a royal banquet. It's not oil al shulchan malachim. So he said, the Chazon Ish answered that the queen, in Yiddish, the Queen of England eats it every day for breakfast. So it's a new definition of Oel HaShulchan Malachim. It doesn't mean would you serve it in a royal banquet and at a wedding. That's the way everybody usually learns. He said if it's such a cheap Michael that there was no King of England, the Queen, I think. So if the Queen of England eats it for breakfast, that's called Oel HaShulchan Malachim. That's quite a chumrah. It's usually assumed otherwise. The Birkei Yosef quotes an opinion that although we don't pass palter with mekel, if the bread is baked by the local baker and everybody in the neighborhood eats the bread, so why should I fall in love with the baker's daughter to have a life supply of bread? She's probably going to marry one of the non-Jewish boys in the neighborhood. It's only us if it's a private nochri who gives me the food. But if he's a baker, they never made the exam. So what about Bishul Akum? Ought to be the same thing because the prohibition is the same. So we don't accept that opinion. We paskin that there was such an opinion in the days of Rishonim. The accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is that Palter is only heta by pas because they use the expression, they paraphrase the pasuk in Chumash, Al Alechem Yechiyo Adam. Because years ago, bread used to be the staple of all the meals. So you can't survive without the bread. But on the other foods, we are not mekel. So the question was, but what if the tuna fish is cooked in pego pego? You don't even know who the goy is who pushed the button. So it's done in such an impersonal way. They send it all over the world. So I don't even know who the goy is. I'm going to travel to pego pego. By the time I'll come to the factory to find out who the goy is who pushed the button 2 years ago when they made this, he's probably not living there anymore. He probably was fired and he works in Puerto Rico, he works in Canada, wherever, somewhere else. So this didn't still applies. The Bishul Akum still applies. It's so impersonal. So there was an opinion that is mutter. So that opinion was never accepted. So they say the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't think it appears in his Tshuvas, but Rav Nota Greenblatt, who lives in Memphis, Tennessee, learned by Rav Moshe for a while. So he every so often he says over things the name Rav Moshe Feinstein. So he wrote this up. He remembers Rav Moshe said that Mikra Din, it really should have been mutter if it's done in such an impersonal way. It's sent all over the world from a distant location. So what kind of chashash chasnas can there be? There's no kirav adas at all. But the poskim say that they made a loy plug rabbanon. Even in this case, it doesn't apply. Like it says in Shulchan Aruch, even if it's a galach who did the pasakam or the bishalakam, the galach officially doesn't have any daughters. Officially, they're supposed to be celibate. So what do you mean chasnas? He has no children. So how can it lead to intermarriage? It says in the Shulchan Aruch that even though the monks used to be experts in making bread and bishalakam and so on, stam yenam, the monks used to make a lot of wine, so still, even though he doesn't have any daughters, the chashash chasnas, the gzeira still applies. So Moshe Feinstein softened it a little bit, so he said, the loy plug rabbanon, we assume that pasakam and bishalakam, the stam yenam, is also even if the person is a monk and he doesn't have any children. That's only if the cooking process is the same as the way you cook it at home. Let's say we would cook the potatoes, we would cook raw potatoes in a little pot, and they in the factory, they have a pot the size of this room. A million times as big as the little pot, but basically it's a pot with water, and they cook it. It's just that it's times a million. But if it's a totally different style of bishul, let's say at home, you would cook it by putting another pot with water. And there in the factory, they have a different way. They steam it or some other way that people don't do in a private home. So then Rav Moshe is quoted by Rav Nata Grimel. He said that in such a case, you can be mekel. Then you don't have to make a loy plug rabbanon. In such a case, there's no gzeir. So in Europe, there used to be a practice that even if there's an opinion that's mekel and bishul akum that we don't accept, but if there were two tzadim lahakel, mitzad A and mitzad B, and we neither accept A nor B, but if you have it tzirif are both together, so then there would be mekel in Europe. So here we would be mitzad. Many don't follow Rav Moshe's kula, but if you have two tzadim lahakel, you would be mitzarif that together with something else. For example, just to throw in another idea, the Lashon HaGemara is that they only prohibited if the food, the Bishul Akum, is Oel HaShulchan Malachim, L'lapis Boyas HaPas. That's the Lashon HaGemara. You would eat it in a royal banquet. The Pashim Shad, eat it in a royal banquet. lelapis ba'ez hapas, with the purpose of filling your stomach. Like you have fish and you have soup and you have meat and you have cooked vegetables, that's all courses in the meal to fill you up. Let's say you have potato chips, chocolate bars, potato chips you never eat in a meal to fill you up. I used to learn b'chavrusa with a fella, now he's a big Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. He used to make potato chip sandwiches. He had lofa, piece of bread on top, piece of bread on bottom. You put potato chip sandwiches. That's very unusual. But normal people don't make potato chip sandwiches. So the Aruch HaShulchan quotes the Shita Sagoinim that if the food is such a food that's simply not the lapis by a sapas, a chocolate bar or potato chips, you never eat it to fill you up. It's eaten as a snack, candies. So there's an opinion from the Goyim that there's no bishulakim on that. So we don't really, some do follow that opinion, but most don't accept that opinion. But if you have a tziruf, let's say it's made in such an impersonal way, so there's, if you, the meaning used to be that if you have two tzadim lahakel, there would be room to be mekel. The Ran has a collection of tshuvas haran. The Ran in the tshuva points out that there is a machlokes harishonim, how to understand the nature of the prohibition of bishul akum. The motivation to prohibit bishul akum was that we're afraid it may lead to intermarriage. So do we consider it, if you eat bishul akum, is considered as if you're dancing with the non-Jewish woman, as if you're hugging and kissing the non-Jewish woman? Or should we say, no, the prohibition was because it may lead to intermarriage, but they declared that it's macholos asuris. They declared the food is not kosher. What's the difference whether you say, every so often you have like that in the Gemara, they had a certain concern. What motivated the Chachamim to make a gzera was one thing, but the gzeras have to be made called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein Deraisa Tikkun. It has to be patterned after Dinim Deraisa. So it could be that the motivation was because the concern that may lead to intermarriage, but the essence of the gzera was that they declared that the food is macholos asuris. So what's the difference? Bottom line, you're not allowed to eat the bishul lakum. So the Ran and the Chua writes that there are three differences la'alocha. So one difference he has is bitl b'roiv. The din of bitl b'roiv is a universal din, doesn't only apply with respect to non-kosher food. The Gemara talks about the fact that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur has to take v'lokach midam ha'por or midam ha'soyer. He mixes together the dam for parachatas hashalot in the soil Hashem. He mixes them together. He does separate zrikas on the dam b'par and dam ha'sor in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then in front of the paroiches in the heichal. But then when he zorek on the mizbech ha'pnimi, we assume arvin l'kronos. He mixed together the dam and then you pour it on the four kanos on mizbech ha'pnimi. So the Tanoim raised an issue of lokach midam hapar, midam ha'soyer, hadov yadua, the par is a big fat animal and the soyer is a skinny malink, so there's going to be much more dam hapar than there's going to be dam ha'soyer. One can rig it and you can see to it that there should be more dam ha'soyer than dam hapar. That's how you hold the klishores. The Kohen has to hold the klishores in his right hand. He holds it under the par only for 2 seconds. And he holds the cup under the soyer for 10 seconds. So you'll have more dam ha'sor than you're going to have dam ha'por. What likelihood is it that it's going to be exactly 50-50? One chance in 5 billion, trillion, zillion, million. How is it possible it's going to be 50-50? Ruba de ruba is going to be lahadov yodur shadam ha'por meruba medam ha'sor. And in rare cases, you can arrange the sito that it should be the reverse. So the Mori asked the Kasha, how is the Kohen Gadol in fulfillment of this requirement to be zorik the dam, v'lokach midam ha'par midam ha'sar, and the four karnas ha'mizbech ha'pnimi, either this is going to be 51% or that's going to be 51%. So whatever's in the mute is bottled b'roiv, so it's considered as if he's not being zorik the dam ha'soyer. Or if the dam ha'par is in the mute, so he's not being zorik the dam ha'par. So the Tanaim work on that kashin. Why don't you say that the dam that's in the mute should be bottled b'roiv? So Gemara gives, Rabbi Yudi gives an answer, and the Rabban gives an answer. Machleg is what the answer is to that kasha. But the din of bitl b'roiv applies in kol ha'Torah kulo. So the bitl b'roiv is usually whatever is in 51%, whatever is 49% or less is bottle. The exception to the rule is, let's say, macholos asuris. If you buy treif or cookies from the store that don't have a hechsher, so how treif could it be? They don't put chazer in the cookies, so there may be a little treif or oil there. So the oil is not 51% of the ingredients, much less than 51%. The answer is, maybe they put in some trefa oil, trefa ingredient, that's nice and tam. And that's a new din, the tam ki ikar, machlokes, whether tam ki ikar is a din deraisa, din derabanan. So in Shulchan Aruch, we machmer like Taisvus, the tam ki ikar is an isa deraisa. So even though the trefa ingredient in the trefa cookies, the cakes of the cookies, is way less than 50%, but since they put it in for a purpose, they put it in that it should taste better. So since you can taste it, so the halacha declares a tam ki ikar. If you can taste the flavor of the trefa oil, even though it's way less than 50%, it's considered as if you're eating the chazav itself. Considered as if you're eating the trefa thing itself. So this rule of tam ki ikar only applies to macholos asuris, if the food is not kosher. If the food, you're not talking about in the area of kashrus, so there's no din, the dam apar and the dam asoyer, there's no din of shishim over there. The Gemara, the Tanoim, we're working on the kashrus, one is going to be much more than the other, so it's going to be roiv. So the question is, by pasakum, abisholakum, if the nochri cooked something, let's say the nochri cooked some chicken, and then some of the schmaltz from the chicken, it was a kosher chicken, but because the Nochri cooked it, so everything from the chicken, you're not allowed to eat. Bishalakum. Let's say some of the schmaltz from the chicken falls into the vegetable soup, and that would taste better. You can taste the flavor of the schmaltz, but the schmaltz is nowhere near 51% of the whole mixture. So do you say it's eating bishalakum is like dancing with a Nochri, it's like kissing, hugging a Nochri? So if it's batel b'raib, it's batel b'raib. So you're not eating bishalakum. Or should I say, no, what motivated the Chachamim to prohibit bishalakum is that it may lead to intermarriage, but they declared it as macholos asuris. So if it's macholos asuris, then you have to have shishim. So that's a machloikis, and the psak in Shulchan Aruch is that raib is enough. You don't need shishim. Why is raib enough? It's not considered macholos asuris. It's not a chefza macholos asuris. It's considered as if you're dancing with the nachris. If you're kissing a nachris, it's an act of hiskaris. Related to that should also be, let's say, the Nochri have a maid in the house, she's not Jewish, and she takes some eggs and she cooks the eggs, she makes fried eggs for herself. She fries eggs in my frying pan. So that's real bishalakum. We don't eat eggs, we don't eat raw eggs, so the Gemara says explicitly, bishalakum. Eggs are not called nechel kamo shuchai. Years ago, Chazanim used to eat raw eggs. They said it's good for their voice. I don't know today. I don't know if there are any Chazanim today. But the Gemara considers eggs are not roi lechel kamo shuchai. So if the Nochris cooks the kosher eggs in my pot, I'm not allowed to eat the eggs. Do I have to kasher the pot? So that's a machlokes in the Rishonim. The whole institution of kashering trefa pots only applies because there's a din yin shishim, because there's a din of tam ki ikar. If there wouldn't be a din of tam ki ikar, if you're not talking about macholos asuras, so there's no din of blias kalim. There's always going to be roiv against it. When the tray for blia from the pot is going to go into the new kosher food that I'm going to cook later, I can't eat the eggs that she cooked because that's bishalakum. But I'm going to wash out the pot. Not going to be any eggs left. I'm going to cook something. I'm going to fry something else in the pot. So how much blia is going to come out from the pot? For sure you're going to have roiv against it. Sometimes in rare cases you'll even have shishim against it, but for sure you're going to have roiv against it. So the question is, if you say that bishalakum doesn't need shishim, so you shouldn't have to kasher the pot. So that's what the Ran writes in the Tshuva. That's the second nafkamina. First nafkamina, do you need shishim or not? So we pass on the Shulchan Aruch, you don't need shishim, roiv is enough. Second nafkamina should follow that you never have to kasher the trefa pot. So that's already a problem, because benegir to the shishim, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you don't need shishim, roiv is enough. Benegir to kashering the pot, Shulchan Aruch quotes that it's a sveka de dina. And we're generally machman that you have to kasher the pot after the goy cook kosher food in it. Why do you have to kasher the pot if he just said there's no din of tam ki ikar? So you got to work on the teretz. It must be some new factor introduced over here. But that's a problem. The only time the Mishnah Berurah is prepared to makel, Mishnah Berurah has on Arachaim, it doesn't have on Yerideya, but in Hilchas Shabbos, the Gemara has a din that one is, we don't permit Amira L'Nochri on Shabbos. Whatever you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do for you on Shabbos. You're going to ask a non-Jew to drive me by car or to take me in the elevator or something. So we don't allow Amira L'Yakam on Shabbos. So to ask a non-Jew to cook food on Shabbos is Amira L'Yakam. But for a choy l'shem b'sakana, we do allow. So let's say in the hospitals, You have a Jewish hospital, so who cooks the food? Not everybody's a chodesh yesh b'sakana. Some of them are chodesh ein b'sakana. So we have non-Jews cooking all the food on Shabbos for all the patients, all the Jewish patients. And the din is that it's mutter. The Gemara says that Amir al-Nachri is mutter. The whole list of around 10 kulas. Amir al-Nachri is mutter mishum yushal b'eretz Yisrael. The Gemara has in Gittin Daf Ches to buy up land from the Arabs that it should be under Jewish control. Mishum b'eretzol b'yalaw Amir al-Yakum. Abumakam tzolos kisvi ha-kodesh. Let's say the shul is burning down, and we ask a goy to carry the Sifre Torah in a real Rishus Rab Deraisa to save the Sifre Torah from being destroyed. And the whole list of kulas, the whole list of Haterim, the Malkam Mitzvah, the Rabbin, we allow to turn on the lights in Shul, to turn off the lights in Shul, to save money for the community. So the Malkam Mitzvah, the Rabbin, we have a whole list of kulas when we allow Amir Eliakim. So one of the kulas is for Chodesh Ein B'Sakana. If a person has a cold and he has to lay in bed, so that's Chodesh Ein B'Sakana. It can't function normally, so we're permitted to ask a goy to make a fire on Shabbos. In Shulchan Aruch, they quote when the German government put the Maharam Rutenberg in prison, he didn't do anything wrong. The practice used to be in the Middle Ages, pirates used to kidnap people and hold up the community, the Jewish community, for ransom, hold up the family, the wealthy family, for ransom. Today, it's still common in South America, Maisim B'chol Yom, Mexico. South America, they pinpoint specific people who are wealthy and they kidnap them. They kidnap someone from the family and they know that they'll get money there. So in the Middle Ages, that was a common practice. They would kidnap people. And hold up the Jewish community for ransom. So they put the Maharam Rutenberg in prison because they knew that the Jews would pay money in order to free him. So the Rosh was a student of the Maharam Rutenberg. He was wealthy. He was prepared to put up half of the money, I think, and he was going to collect the money from the rest of the Jewish community. So Maharam Rutenberg said, you're not allowed to. And he quoted the Mishnah in Gittin, middle of Gittin. The Mishnah has a takana, a whole series of takanas, Mishnah after Mishnah after Mishnah after Mishnah. And he put him, Sashuim Yesal Kadei Demem. You're not allowed to do Pinyan Shvuyim to give more than the person would be worth on the slave market. And they wanted an exorbitant amount of money. So there is a machlokes in the Gemara and a machlokes in the Rishonim how to paskin. It means that it's prohibited to be paid the Yesal Kadei Shemayim. You're not allowed to. The Gemara says because you'll encourage the terrorists to kidnap more people because they see they're making a lot of fortune and money. Or did the Chacham say that you're not obligated to, but if you want to, you may. So the minig, it's a machlokes in the Rishonim how to paskin. The minig is lahakil. The minig is that you may give more than the person is worth if you want to. The Jewish community is not obligated to. Family is not obligated to. Unless his wife was taken. That's one of the shibudim by marriage. When a couple is married, so there are reciprocal obligations. The husband has shibudim to the wife. The wife has shibudim to the husband. So one of the husband's obligation is pidyon chay habal chay liftas es ishtoy. Years ago, it was a common thing. A woman would be kidnapped by the pirates, and the din is that the husband is obligated to do pinyan shvuyim, even if it costs a fortune of money. Just like if the person himself, let's say, is kidnapped by the pirates, and he doesn't want to remain in prison, and he has his checkbook, and he wants to buy his way out, so if he wants to, he for sure is allowed to give more than yesal kadei demem. So when it comes to his wife, that's a takanas chachamim. He's obligated to spend even a fortune of money. Yes, al kdei demem. But if it's not the person himself, it's not his wife, then it's a machlokes in the Gemara, machlokes in Rishon, whether it's usur to be paid the yes al kdei demem, or it means that you're not obligated to. So the Maharam Rutenberg said you're not allowed to, and he told the Jewish community they're not allowed to give them money. They should let him die in prison. And then he said, and even after he'll die in prison, they shouldn't be paid his body either. So as long as he was alive, they followed his instructions and he stayed in the prison. After he died, one balabas felt worse. After he died, he felt Ben is not going to be buried in Kevi Yisrael. So he violated the instructions of the Maharam Rutenberg and he paid a fortune of money to redeem the dead body. And then later on, he was rewarded. He did Shaloi Kedid. He was rewarded. He was buried next to the Maharam Rutenberg. When he died later, they buried him next because he was the one who redeemed his body. So when the Maharam Rutenberg was in prison, he didn't do anything wrong. They were just holding up the Jewish community for the ransom money. So they treated them very nicely in the prison. So every day his Talmidim came, and he used to talk and learning with them. The Rosh, and the Mordechai, and the Agos Maimoni, and all the whole Chabur, the Tashbetz, whole group of the last generation of the Balei HaTosfos. They were all there. So in Shulchan Aruch they quote this story. When they would come to visit the Maharam on Shabbos to talk and learning, sometimes it would be chilly in the prison, so they would ask the prison guards to please make a fire to keep them warm. They're afraid they're going to catch a cold. So Amirul Anachri is Muta B'Chol Hashem B'Sakan, means either you already are a Chol Hashem B'Sakan and you want to get better, or you're afraid you'll become a Chol Hashem B'Sakan, so you're permitted to ask the non-Jew to make a fire so you don't catch a cold. You shouldn't become a Chol Hashem B'Sakan. So let's say all the Jewish hospitals, so you have non-Jewish hospitals have Cholim Sheim B'Sakana, and you have non-Jewish people cooking food on Shabbos for the patients. And Dr. Belkin Nebuch was Dr. Belkin used to be the head of the yeshiva here. He used to be the Rosh Yeshiva. First he was chosen when Dr. Revel passed away. So first he was chosen by the students to be the Rosh Yeshiva, because they loved him very much. And then there was a machloikis who should be the president. So the people who made him Rosh Yeshiva didn't want to make him president because they thought that would ruin him. He's not going to have time to learn. That's what happened in the end. He got so busy, he made it into a whole university. Under him, it grew. It just used to be a yeshiva with a college. That was the whole thing. It used to be known as Yeshiva College. And then under Dr. Belkin, it grew. So that he had to give up learning for many years. So they made him both the president and the Rosh Yeshiva. So when, at the end of his life, he was Nebuch sick for a while. So he was. So first he was treated in Columbia Presbyterian. And then when he knew he was going to die, he says that he wanted to die at home. So they had him moved to Einstein. He said he wanted to die at Einstein. That's home. He didn't want to die in Columbia Presbyterian. So Einstein was run by Jewish. They had the Hashgacha on the cafeteria. So on Shabbos morning, the first Shabbos he was there, so they gave him a warm breakfast. So he started screaming, "This is the Chai Yeshiva. Who cooked the food on Shabbos? What's going on?" So the Mashgiach came in and he brought him the food. He said, "How can you cook food on Shabbos?" Mashgiach was so terrified. He didn't know what happened. The answer is, he was a Chol Hashem B'Sakana. But they cooked all the food for all the patients. A Chol Hashem B'Sakana. Amir L'Nachri is Mutter. So it says in Shulchan Aruch that the Chol, usually Bishul Akum is Aser, but if it's mutted on Shabbos under these circumstances, the Chol is permitted to eat the warm food that they cooked to him on Shabbos. On Metzoy Shabbos, even the Chol shouldn't eat the leftover food. If there's enough time on Metzoy Shabbos to cook other foods, so let him not eat the Bishul Akum. So the question is, the food that was cooked by the Goy on Shabbos in the same kelim that they cook all week long. They say the kelim become treif now because it's Bishul Akum. All week long they're careful that it shouldn't be Bishul Akum. On Shabbos they have Bishul Akum, so the Mishnah Berurah says he thinks over here you can be mekel. Since it was permissible to ask the Goy to cook the food on Shabbos, and the Chayla was allowed to eat it on Shabbos, whatever is left over on Mitzvah Shabbos, not allowed to eat, so the Mishnah Berurah is mekel over there. There you don't have to kasha the pot. But if the Goy cooks Bishul Akum on the weekdays that you're not allowed to eat, so then the Mishnah Berurah is assuming you have to kasha the pot. So that's a stirim psak halacha. If we paskin that you don't need shishim, means that it's not macholas asuras. So there's no din of tam ki yikah only applies if it's macholas asuras. So why are we machman that you need hagola? The Ran explained very well that it's totally zebezem. So you got to know more yeridah to know the answer to that. Okay, we're not going to go into it today. So the Ran has a third nafkemina ledina, where the nature of the iser of Bishul Akum, is it like dancing with the Nachris? Or do you say no? What motivated the Chachamim to introduce the prohibition was Chasnus, but they declared that it's Macholas Asur. So he has another Afkamina that runs as follows. There is a Mishnah in the fourth Perek in Chulin, in Perek Behemam Kasha, that if the animal broke it, if there's a broken leg in the animal at a certain location where the Tzumas HaGidin is, all the Gidin crisscross over each other, the whole animal is considered a treifa. If the leg is broken an inch above or an inch below the Tzumas HaGidin, so then you can't, the animal is not a treifa. You can eat the rest of the flesh. You can't eat from the break on, from the end of the limb. The more learns it after a pussy. Fine. So the Mishnah says if the Shoichet checks the animal and has a break on the leg, by the Tzumas HaGidin, the whole animal is a treifa. So the Ramban, the Rosh quotes the Ramban, he asked the Kasha, why is it a treifa? Let the Shoichet take a saw, cut off another inch. So if the animal broke its leg an inch above or an inch below the Tzumas HaGidin, it's not a treifa. So let him use his brains, let him cut off another inch, and then shech the animal. So the Ramban says, Anachinami, if the shechet has the presence of mind to cut off another inch, and then he shechts it, the animal will be kosher. But we're talking, the shechet, it didn't occur to him. He shechted the animal when it had the break by the Tzumas Hagin. So the Rosh quotes this from the Ramban, and he says, I never heard of anything so ridiculous. How can it be? The animal broke its leg by the Tzumas Hagin. The animal is a trefa. And he proves from the Gemara that there's a rule that Macholos Asuras, by trefa for sure, but he holds even by all Macholos Asuras, that trefa ain't a chazeras nechshera. Once you declare that the animal is a trefa, even if you do something later on, it's not going to become kosher. So we assume that that rule applies to all Macholos Asuras. So here there's a big machlokes in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say a non-Jew cooks some food. Let's say you have a steak. So some people eat steak rare done. Other people like steak well done. They don't want that it should be half raw and half cooked. Let's say the non-Jew cooks the broils the steak and machal ben de risoy. Some people would eat it the way it is. So the din is the steak is also that bishalakum. Then a Jew takes the steak, he puts it back on the fire and he cooks it some more, and it's mevushal now called tzarkai. So there's a machlokes. Does it become kosher later on? So the Ran explains what's the machlokes. I said this is all one big machlokes. If you declare bishalakum as macholas asuras, so then treifena chazeres lachshera. Once the food became not kosher, it can't become kosher later on. But if you say it's like it's not the food is macholas asuras, it's like dancing with a nochris. But if the nochri cooked it only shlish bishul and then the Jew cooked it the rest. So if there's a Yad Yisrael B'Emtza, the Jew participated a little bit in the cooking as well, so then there wouldn't be any Yisrael. So we paskin consistently, we paskin kosher, in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin if the non-Jew cooked it, shlish bishulo, l'chatchili yimachme, but if it's a big shas hatchak, we revert back to the Iker Adin is at its mutter. So we paskin the Iker Adin, that if the Nochri cooked it shlish bishulo, and then the Jew continued, it became treif. But if the Jew continues to cook it, then you may eat it. So you see, it's not a cheftz of macholos asuras. Not only is the chashash of intermarriage the motivation to introduce the gzera d'rabbanan, that is the essence of the gzera d'rabbanan. We consider it as if eating the bishulakim is considered like dancing with the nochris. But the rule of treifena chazeres lachshera wouldn't apply over there. So the Ran explained that these three issues are totally zebizah. The problem is in the Shulchan Aruch, two of them we paskin consistently. Treifa is, if it was cooked by the Nochri, it is choyza lehetera, because we say it's not mochalos asuras, and it's bottled berov, you don't need shishim. And when you get to blias kelim or machma. So that's the kasha that you gotta know some more yeredeya to know the answer. With respect to pasakum, the Chacham prohibited pasakum. So the Gemara says we have certain kulas. As long as the Yisrael has a partial participation in the baking of the bread. So let's say the Jew did shkiras hatanur. The Jew lit the flame in the oven, he put in the logs and the fire is there, he turned on the fire, and then the nochri kneaded the dough and he put it into the oven. So as long as the Jew did shkiras hatanur, so there's no prohibition of pasakum. What about bishalakum? Is also the same. If the Jew lit the fire, hidlik sa'esh, then the non-Jew puts the food on top of the fire. So that's a machlokes in the Rishonim and in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber follows the Chachmi Svard, who are machmir, that kula only applies to pas, alalech miyichi ho'adam, so the Chacham felt compelled to come up with certain kulas, and it doesn't apply to bishul. And the Ramo is makel even on bishul. That's a big problem, and all the many of the restaurants in Eretz Yisrael, where they have hashgachas, and all the kosher restaurants in America, all the yeshivas, they have the same thing. The Jew, they don't have, the Jewish workers are going to ask for much more salary than non-Jewish workers. So they have all the workers done by non-Jews, but they have a Jew, the mashgiach, turns on the fire. So, but we have some Sephardish students in yeshiva, so how is it permissible for them to eat any of the food? They don't hold from that heter. So that is a big problem. Dr. Lim asked the Baron Soloveitchik, does he know Rabbi Soloveitchik had passed away already? So he asked Rabbi Baron Soloveitchik, who was teaching in the yeshiva at the time, did he ever hear anything about this? So he says he remembers when during his father's time there were three Sephardish students in the whole yeshiva. There weren't so many students in the whole yeshiva. We didn't have over 1,000 students at that time. He said there were three Sephardish students, and he remembers that his father knew about it, and they didn't see that there's a problem, even though the bishul was done by the non-Jews, the Jew only lit the fire. So Rabban Soloveitchik gave different suggestions why it should be mutar. It's a problem. It's a problem in Eretz Yisrael. How can the Sfardim eat in any of the restaurants? They all rely on this kula.
Even if you hold like the Ramah, but how long does the Hetzer last for? Does it last a day? Does it last loss of lavo? I mean, if they keep the fire on, like most of the
pastors
keep the fire on.
If the fire is on, so it's still on, okay.
There's a stay heaven
that says it only lasts a day. Well, Shulchan Aruch says about the oven, baking in the oven, it says even if they turned off the fire, but there's a little warmth, and then when the goy wants to continue to bake, he makes it higher, so the heter can last a few days. The Ramah quotes like that in Shulchan Aruch, the Eter by the oven even lasts for a longer time.
Does Rabbi hold of these glow lights that they have in the factories?
So Rabbi Heinemann from Baltimore, from the Star K, came up with that kula, that if you have a Jewish electrician, I guess, who will screw in a bulb, a 5-watt bulb, into the oven. So just like Hashlochas Kisim helps, the goy lit the fire to bake the bread, and the Jew throws in a match, or the Jew throws in a piece of wood. So the Jew participated partially in the Asiyas HaEish, in the Shgiras HaTanur. So there's a sefer, there's a tiny little sefer from the days of the Goyim. It's not a whole sefer, it's just 2 pages long. The Yamshel Shloima has the whole So this is one of them, where the Hashlochas Kisim helps to be matir pasakum. So the minig is that the minig chutzla, minig and bavel was lahakum, minig and eretz yisrael was lahachmir. So the minig all over is with mekel on that, on Hashlochas Kisim. So that's what Rabbi Heinemann had a heter, that if the Jew puts in a light that participates a little bit in giving a little bit of warmth. If you have a 5-watt bulb, also gives a little bit of warmth. It wouldn't be able to bake, it wouldn't be able to cook anything without the goys lighting the rest of the fire. So Rabbi Heinemann was mekel on that. So the years ago, I was not too happy about that. Rabbi Belsky, Zichrono Berachah, was not happy. Rabbi Ganak and the OU, all three of us were not happy. But some of the rabbanim who worked in the office in the OU, a talmidim of Rabbi Heinemann from Baltimore, so they used to give Hashgachas under the OU based on Rabbi Heinemann's kula. So that was the one and only shaila that we ever sent to Rabbi Al-Yashiv. Rabbi Al-Yashiv had already retired from the Rabbanut. Because money was in the Rabbanut, so he felt an obligation to try to find Heterim. He paskani for the whole kehil after he retired. So he was always machman everything. He didn't feel meshubah to the kehilah to kvetch Heterim. So the OU never wanted to ask him any shailas because we knew in advance probably going to be a machma. On this shaila, we wrote up the shaila, we sent it to Rabbi Al-Yashiv, and he said he doesn't like the heter at all. He thinks that it's not valid. So the OU discontinued it. So the OU doesn't hold from that. But the star case still gives the hashgachas based on that.
Some people are machmir that if a food is not Ola al-Shulchan Malachim in that form, but it is Ola al-Shulchan Malachim in another form, you'd have to be machmir for
Pishul Hakum.
Does
everything
we should be machmir
in? Yeah, the Pashtun is basically the same food. In Shulchan Malachim you would make it even fancier. Let's say the Shlish Bishulo, you wouldn't serve it, maybe steaks you would serve Shlish Bishulo, but vegetables, if it's half raw, you wouldn't serve it in Shulchan Malachim, but it's basically the same food.
So something like potato chips, you need to be machmir on because they might serve like real potatoes?
That's a question. Maybe potato chips is a totally different thing. But basically, potatoes is Olal Shulchan Malachim. Basically, that food is Olal Shulchan Malachim. Yep. Probably should be Machmir. Whenever they make the tuna fish, in Pego, wherever, or Puerto Rico, whenever they make it to ship it to Eretz Yisrael, so the majority of the Jews in Eretz will keep kosher Sfardim. So then the Rabbanut insists that it's not enough that the Mashgiach pushes the button to turn on the fire. The Mashgiach has to push the wagon. They have wagons with the cans of tuna fish. And someone has to push the wagon into the room where they're doing the bishul. So the Rabbanut insists, because the majority of the people who keep kosher and etzol asfardim, so they insist not to rely on the hadlokas ha'esh al-yidei ha-yisrael, that he has to push it in the wagon mamish, that he should do the bishul al-yidei yisrael. Tosis quotes a kula from the Ravid. We're not sure which Ravid it is, probably maybe a different Ravid. There are a few people who are known as Ravid. So Tosis quotes a kula that the prohibition of bishul akum doesn't apply if it's the mshareses is cooking the basis of Yisrael. If you have a non-Jewish maid who works in a Jewish home and she does the cooking, so I'm not going to marry her daughter. It's a different. We don't have a caste system, but the balabas's son is not going to marry the maid's daughter. It just doesn't go. In America, everything goes, but. So we don't accept that opinion. So in Shulchan Aruch they say lechatchila we don't allow b'diyevet we are mekel. So what do you mean b'diyevet? So if the maid already cooked the food, so we say what are you going to do with the food that she cooked? She cooked the flesh for Shabbos, so you're going to have to throw it out, or you have to give it to the maid. She should take it home to eat it. That's called b'diyevet. So you don't have to throw it out. You don't have to give it to the goyish neighbor, a goy to maid. You can eat it yourself. But when you get to kashering the pot, that's called lechatchila. So it's a funny psak. You can eat the food, but you have to kasher the pot. If anything, it ought to be sometimes the reverse, that the food is treif, but not that treif that you have to kasher the pot. Here is the reverse. The food you can eat, because legabi the food is b'diyevet, but legabi the pot, not to use it next time. That's lechatchila. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So the minig is that whenever you have two tzadim lahakel, that was the minig, whenever you have two tzadim lahakel, so we make a lechatchila on the bishul akum. The Yerushalmi has a suffix about mu'ushan with respect to basa b'cholov deraisa. The basa b'cholov deraisa is only derech bishul. If you just have kovishka mu'ushal, you're eating meat with milk together, that's only an issa derabbanan. It's only awesome and atar if you cooked it together. So what if you did ishun? You smoked the meat and the milk together. What if you did ishun on Shabbos? Is that a melacha deraisa? And what if you had bishul akum? The nochri did ishun on the food. He made it edible with smoking. The smoke is not necessarily going to be burning hot. The smoke is maybe warm, but it's not going to be atzalet. It's not bishul. Smoking makes it roi lachila. So it's an ibayil leiv shita. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins on bishul akum is only the rabbanon, so the mekel. Mashenikin Shabbos and Basta Bechalav, you're dealing with Nisa deraisa, so an ibayil leiv shita, you go luchumra. So the Shulchan Aruch is making on Me'ushal. So Chacham Avadya says the suffix of the Yerushalmi was it's a different form of Bishul. So he was of the opinion that even if you steam, you cook the food by steaming it with hot steam, he thought that that's also a different form of cooking from the normal way. So he was making on that. Many others are machmer on that. The Gemara says the Chachamim prohibited Stam Yenom because Mishum B'Daisehem, and then they added on also Mishum Chashash Nisuch. So what if the waiter pours kosher wine? So that's not because B'Daisehem, I'm not going to marry the waiter's daughter. It's kosher wine. If I want a life supply of the kosher wine, I'll marry the daughter of the Mr. Herzog, the owner of the wine company. I'm not going to marry the waiter's daughter. So if the whole Chashash is Mishum Nisuch, so the Gemara says if you have Yayim Mevushal, the wine was cooked already, so it's not as good, not as tasty as wine that's not cooked. So you're not allowed to use Yayim Mevushal al Gabi HaMizbech. So because in the Beis HaMikdash you're not allowed to use Yayim Mevushal, so the non-Jews wouldn't use it either for Avodah Zarah purposes. So whenever the Yayin is Yayim Mevushal, so you don't have to be concerned about Maga Akum. So many years ago, the conservative rabbinate gave a psak that you're allowed to drink Welch's grape juice because it's Yayim Mevushal. So it was a big joke. They wrote it up in the Yiddish newspaper. The big joke, what do you mean? But it's manufactured by the Goyim. The din that the Yayim Mevushal, there's no Issa Maga Akum and there's no Chashash of Chasnus. But it means it's kosher wine that the non-Jewish waiter poured the wine. So then you say there's no chashash Nisuch. But if there's a Chashash Chasnus, the wine is produced by the non-Jews. That doesn't help.
Okay, there's a concern by grape juice. Rebbe said there's a concern by grape juice also, not just yayin.
Grape juice is yayin, yeah. Grape juice is the same as yayin. Beferish, the Gemara said beferish. Grape juice is the same as yayin, has the same prohibition, yeah. So in America, we generally make a Rav Moshe Feinstein says a yayin mevushel. There's no prohibition on maga akum. How much do you have to cook the wine? So the Chassidish Rebbe, who gives the hechsher on Kedem wine, is of the opinion, he followed his stepfather who gave before him, so he follows the opinion, that was their opinion, that it's only called Yayin Mevushel if you cooked it to 212 and it started to evaporate. But if you just made it Yatzaletis and it didn't reach 212, then it's not called Yayin Mevushel. So they have, Kedem wine has two kinds of bottles. Some of the bottles say pasteurized Einem Mevushel, some say pasteurized Yayin Mevushel. If they cooked it to 212, then it's called Yayin Mevushel. And Moshe Feinstein writes in his tshuva, he thinks that that's a mistake. It's a misunderstanding of what the Shach said. He says the Or Zeruah was the Rebbe of the Maharam Rutberg, the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos, writes the Sofik, how much do you have to cook the wine that it should be considered Yayin Mevushel? Is it sufficient if it was cooked Hefsheru Zeu Bishulo, lukewarm? Or they say no, Hefsheru Lo Zeu Bishulo, you have to cook it till the point of Yatzoletis. But to say you have to cook it till it starts to evaporate, that's a mistake. So Moshe says all of the wines that are pasteurized, they're all called Yayin Mevushel, and there's no din of maga akum on it. And those who want to be machmer, the Rambam follows the Gaonim, that for Kiddush you have to use Davke Yayin Shein Mevushel. So he said, any wine that's pasteurized, any grape juice, a wine that's pasteurized is by definition called Mevushel, because he certainly cooked it to the point of Yatzalet Ispo. Rav Moshe, Rav Al-Yashiv with Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyebach came up with a Chumrah on the Yayin Mevushel, that the Rishonim say the reason why the Chachamim weren't goyzer on the Yayin Mevushel because it's a milsa de lo shchicha. In the days of the Tanoim, it was unusual to make Yayin Mevushel, but today it became such a common practice, so they thought that the Heta doesn't apply anymore today. Rav Moshe Feinstein thought otherwise. He thought that the din still applies in America today. Okay, there's a lot more to discuss, but kids, have a nice day. Tomorrow I think we're going to talk about Bishul B'Shabbos.
I don't even apply it. Thank you very much. Just that pasteurization doesn't cover it. You need it separately.
Who said that?
Shalom Zalman. Alphapedia journey. Come on. Page on this. Hey. Hey, what are you trying to collect money for? You don't even read the website.
Let me ask you.
You don't have a tax rate out there. It's right here in front of you, downstairs.
You're messing up with your tears
in the store. That's the tax rate. Plus, it's not a lot that it has to
be.
Right.
Right. Not in the past 20 minutes, if that's what you're asking.
I sent him my.
That's okay. Yes, I confirm I have it.
Okay, good.
I didn't open it yet, but
no, it's fine.
I'm assuming it says it. Go ahead.
Do you put makaros together for these?
I'm working on it.
So the Steichemen says like this, he says, if the whole din of a shlachas kisei is a hacker, how can you say the hacker asked last loss of love?
You never ask him for seconds.
So he says at least a day, if you're around, you see the guy, but like to say that it lasts for 10 years, so that's his whole title. So this is a big last choice. I think that's true.
The word is because they're gonna eventually it'll burn off. Even if you want to say that Tofo is not literally breaking the house. So whatever you do. It's additional.
So,
they're very shvachetim.